The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Now, we've met Vicky Phelan on this programme on a number of occasions, last week being the most recent. Vicky, of course, who has campaigned so brilliantly for all of the women affected by the cervical cancer scandal. She has been assisted greatly by the work of a Cork man, Stephen Teep, who joins us now on the programme. Stephen, thank you very much for joining
us. Thanks for having me, Matt.
And Stephen, just before we came on air, you were reminding me that we met here 2 years ago. And I met Irene at that stage 2 years ago as well.
You did, yeah.
Unfortunately, Irene passed away how long ago now?
Her first anniversary is next Thursday, so 12 months ago.
How are you?
I'm doing all right. Obviously, it's been, it's been a horrible 12 months, dealing with the grief of losing Irene and trying to, I suppose, manage my boy's grief as well. Oscar and Noah were only 4 and 2 when she passed away.
How much do they realise that she's gone?
Oscar, how do they realise it? Yeah. I had to tell Oscar straight away. He was 4. He knew his mum was sick. He got it straight away. We kind of had been building it up a little bit for him to try and break the news, kind of drip feed the news to him. We had met, Irene got her terminal diagnosis around the 14th of July last year. The first thing we did was we got access to a child social worker to come out to our house from Marymount. And it was really just, how do we break this news to Oscar at such a young age? And what they were saying was, you know, the worst thing we can do is kind of have all of these conversations behind closed doors, because he'll start making up his own versions of events. So the best thing to do is keep the doors open, be as open as possible with him. That was actually our parenting style anyway. That was how our relationship was with Oscar. Like when Irene lost her hair, we were cutting or shaving it off in the kitchen. Oscar was a part of that with videoing it, and kind of, you know, we always made him inclusive to it. So we had built it up to a point that on the day before she died, Oscar and myself were driving past a graveyard, and he turns to me and he goes, "Dad, old people, very old people die, don't they?" And I was like, "They do." And very sick people die too, don't they? And I was like, "They do." But I said, "Your mum is sick." And he was saying, "Oh yeah, but she's not that sick." And that was the point really for me to kind of bring the conversation to that, you know, mum is going to die. But Irene wanted to be the one to tell him that news. So I went home, told Irene, look, this is the conversation I just had with Oscar. He's ready now for us to tell him, you know. And that was on a Tuesday. And Irene was like, okay, look, I'll do it on Friday. And she passed away that night. So we never got the opportunity. Irene never got the opportunity to tell him that she was going to pass away. So that morning, like, she was the middle of the night that happened, and it was 7 o'clock that morning. I had to sit him down and literally continue that conversation the day before. And, you know, like, he's a really bright young boy, and he just got it straight away. He took it like you'd expect an adult to take such horrible news. Like, he literally just broke down in my arms, and God, it's something I never want to go through again. But with regard to Noah then, Noah was too young. And it was July when Irene passed away. It was probably about October, November that Noah actually started to comprehend that she's not coming back. And that's when he realised that his mum was gone then. And I suppose his grief then really started around October, November last year.
When I met you and Irene 2 years ago, did she know she was ill then?
So it was July 2 years ago when we met you. And that March, we were told that the treatment for the cervical cancer that she got diagnosed with that previous September had worked. Everything had gone to plan. There was nothing but scar tissue left where the tumour was. And at that stage, we thought we were on the road to recovery. Our biggest issue at that stage was dealing with fertility, because Irene, because of the treatment, was infertile at that point. And that was actually the biggest problem we had when we met you, you know, that was something that we were trying to go through. But the night we met you down here in Crosshaven, we had, you know, obviously you, when you've got kids, as you know, you have to pre-plan. There's no last minute going out. And so we had the babysitters organized, and we were great night planned. And as you know, we'd the cars dropped off and everything, and she was going to have a few drinks. And, you know, Irene just wasn't feeling right that night, and she only ended up having about 1 or 2 drinks, wanted to go home early, so we left at about 11 o'clock. And we just put it down to, you know, look, she's still she's had a lot of treatment already and is recovering from it. Little did we know there was a huge storm brewing inside her that was that her cancer had returned, which we found out 2 months later.
Now, the original diagnosis of the cancer, how long did that come after the smear tests that she had done, which you got the wrong results
on? So Irene had two smear tests. She had one in 2010, which came back all clear. She had another one in 2013 that came back all clear. Our youngest guy, Noah, was born in April 2015. And the birth of Noah, I suppose, triggered this continuous bleeding from Irene's cervix. And now at the time, everybody was just presuming this was something to do with childbirth, you know, because there was, if you look at Irene's history, she had two clear smear tests with absolutely nothing on them. So there was no trail of thought, wasn't going towards cancer at all. It was just probably this has to be birth, giving birth related. And, you know, there was talks about hormone imbalance and she'd have to take medication for that. And 18 weeks after that, then Irene got diagnosed with cervical cancer, stage 2B cervical cancer. So now when we look at the time trial or the timeline from when Irene had her first smear to when she got diagnosed in 2010, we've learned that she actually had precancerous cells. In 2013, she had the early stages of cancer. And 2015, she had stage 2B cancer and then died last year. So it's a really slow growing cancer, we know that, but which is why a screening program for cervical cancer and smear testing is so important and is the right thing to do. But in Irene's case, it just 100% failed.
How and when did you find out about the results of these previous tests being wrong?
How did we find out? It was a couple of days after Vicky broke her story that I got a call from the HSC saying that Irene smear test got audited. And I was told that she was one of the 17 women at the time. It was 18 now, but it was 17. Then that name has come up in that. And I was in work up in Dublin at the time when I got that call. And I just shocked of it. I was absolutely floored by it. You know, I kind of had in my head since Vicky's story broke about 2 days beforehand that this was going to happen.
Started preparing yourself for it, and still when it happened.
There's no preparing yourself for it, you know, because the news at that point was smear tests were read incorrectly. It led to a delayed diagnosis as a result. And 17 women are dead. There was 209 in total, but 17 of those are dead. And I was like, well, Irene had smear tests. That was the question that she always asked. I don't know how many times, and went to her grave never getting the true answer to it. How did this not get picked up in my smear tests? That was on the Tuesday, absolutely floored by it. And on the Thursday then, I was brought into a meeting in the HSC because I wanted to see someone face-to-face. But they weren't going to tell me over the phone anyway. They had deliberately had a non-clinical person phone us, so we couldn't ask them questions, is what we were told. So met the consultant on that Thursday, early May. And that's when they told us then about the audit, about those two smear tests I told you about, the 2010 and the 2013. But in addition to that, on the top of the page of the audit was a date, the 3rd of July 2017, and that was the date that they would have received that audit.
That they knew?
Yeah.
And they didn't tell Irene?
They didn't tell Irene, and that was the next line of questioning I had for them. Why didn't you? So it turned out that the consultant had met with a number of other consultants that were looking after Irene in the CUH, and they made a decision that no, we won't tell her because she's too sick. They did that without saying anything to me or her GP. These people that only know Irene's medical history but don't know the person made that decision, because the type of person that Irene was would have wanted, if that information came to light 10 seconds before Irene died, she would ask to be told that, you know, that was the type of person she was. Later in November, 3 months after she died, the same group of people met again. And the question this time was, will we tell the next of kin, her husband, me? And they decided again that they wouldn't share that information, just put it in the file and leave it alone. So it wasn't until...
Why do you think that was? I mean, I suppose we're into supposition here, but would it be that they felt they were trying to protect themselves and the state from litigation? Or could it have been a sort of a genuine thing? Look, it's been bad enough for the family without telling them this to maybe think worse of what has happened.
No, I don't believe there's anything genuine about it at all. I think there is a certain level of protection there. Do you know, I'm only one of 221 people, so they weren't genuine for all of us. I don't believe that. I think there was a bigger picture here. Someone, I feel, may have been protecting someone else. Why were the audits done in the first place, and why weren't they put to practical use? About, for example, there's quality issues here when you look at Irene's slides, because the misreads of her slides are huge. It isn't just a little misread. We're talking about giving an all clear to actually having cancer here. So, do you know, why didn't that trigger some sort of quality control process or review of these labs at that point? Instead, they took the other option of hiding that information from people. The memo of 2016 as well suggested that their first protocol here was actually, how do we deal with the likes of yourself and everybody else in the media, instead of actually putting the patient's safety and the patient care first.
See, Stephen, it strikes me as well, I mean, the obvious victims of this are all of the women who died.
Of course.
There are other victims as well.
Yeah.
There's you, mm-hmm. all of the other partners of the women who yeah. died, who are ill, all of the children. This affects so many people. This is affecting thousands of people.
Well, the initial, I suppose, people that are affected by this are the women, but this is it's an attack on the family. It's everybody, you know. It isn't just myself and the boys. Irene's parents are both alive. They're after burying their daughter here as well, you know. Irene's grandmother was at her funeral, her granddaughter's funeral. Irene's got loads of friends, everyone, and that's just one person, and there's another 220 other versions of that. There's women alive today fighting a terminal disease as a result of the delayed diagnosis, and now they're having to have a fight of their life. I'm trying to beat cancer. They're taking this blow to the head as well with regard to, what if someone did their job properly and I got an earlier diagnosis? How different would my life be today?
It strikes me, Stephen, it's really important that you and Vicky Phelan and others keep talking about this, because many stories sort of fall away from public attention, from the public eye. What Vicky and yourself are managing to do is keep it in the public eye, keep the pressure on the government, keep the pressure on the HSE for the answers and for the solutions.
Vicky and I are going nowhere, and we're very conscious of that. And, you know, like, some of the things that we've had to fight for already were the support packages that are put in place. We've almost got over the line funding from the Department of Health to put a support group in place as well for these families. There's 221 today. We know that's going to grow. But proper support groups, because there's women out there who have beaten cancer, but their lives have been totally rewritten for them. They've had cancer before they've had the opportunity to have children, and now they're curious about fertility. Is there an option here for me? There's a small group of us that need, bereavement support and different areas like that. So this is what we're trying to do with the support group now, to get it in place. And thankfully, we're able to work with the Marie Keating Foundation, the Irish Cancer Society, and the Irish Patients Association to put a decent, well-run support group together.
And the other thing that I've noticed that both you and Vicky have been out on as well, which is very important, it's the HPV vaccine. It's looking forward to the next generation, that, you know, encouraging not just teenage girls to get it, but teenage boys as well.
It has to be done. And this isn't just about... This is so much bigger now than the scandal and getting accountability and answers, and they're all important things to do. But to actually be able to, I suppose, to use our voice. I'm conscious my voice is there's a clock ticking on it. It's limited. But while I have it, try and get the best out of it. And with regard to the HPV vaccine, you know, like, how can we prevent this disease? And it's in within the vaccines. They brought it in for girls, but didn't for boys. That needs to be a priority now as well. And let's take it to the next step, where we have HPV screening, HPV vaccines, and why can't we just reduce this HPV disease down to zero fatalities? And I think that should be probably the next level that we need to step this up to.
Stephen Teep, I really appreciate you taking the time to come in, and I know it's going to be a difficult week ahead, first anniversary of Irene's death for you and for the family, but we'll be thinking of you. So thank you very much for taking the time to join us here in The Last Word.
Okay, thanks very much, Matt.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.